This hour, Jean from Portland, James from Salem, Bran from Happy Valley, thank you so much. We have made our goal for this hour, and now on to the KBOO Evening News, produced by volunteers right here in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor two presentations by Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert. Nicole is a big picture thinker in the areas of finance, energy, and the environment, and Lawrence is an inspiring and energetic community organizer from New Zealand. Together, they'll be talking about the smart, simple, and creative ways people are reinventing our world using tools like local currencies, collaborative consumption, green projects, and political organizing. Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert will be speaking at 7 p.m. October 9th at the First Congregational Church, 4515 Southwest West Hills Road in Corvallis, and again at 7 p.m. on October 10th at Tabor Space, Southeast 55th and Belmont in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.
Dada, dada, dada day, Thursday, Thursday. Come one, come all to the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday for an evening of Dada film and music. We'll be playing surrealist silent films and cartoons, and the soundtrack will be provided by you, the audience. So bring your favorite musical instrument, kitchen implement, speak and spell, tantric bell, hotkeys, or tchotchkes to the Clinton Street Theater, Southeast Clinton and 26th Avenue in Portland, this Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. Thursday, Dada, Clinton Dada, Street, KBOO.
At least the haggis arrived at a reasonable hour.
The time is now 5:01. This is KBOO FM Portland, and coming up right now is your local KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Clatsop County Board has rejected an application to build a natural gas terminal in Warrenton.
Environmental activist Rebecca Rubin has pled guilty to charges of conspiracy and arson in a federal court here in Portland.
And California lawmakers hold a hearing on solitary confinement in state prisons in the wake of a prisoner hunger strike.
This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday,
October 10th, 2013. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Earth Liberation Front activist Rebecca Rubin pled guilty in federal court in Portland today to 12 counts of arson and conspiracy stemming from a series of arson fires across the West from 1997 to 2001. KBOO reporter Paul Rowland was in the courtroom and has this report.
12 years have passed since the last Earth Liberation Front, ELF, action in which she is admitted to participating. Today, in a hearing before U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken in Portland, Rebecca Rubin, now 40, calmly pled guilty to 12 counts of arson and conspiracy, each of which carries a penalty of 5 to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. In a complex plea agreement worked out over many months by her lawyer Thomas Troberman of Seattle and Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephen Pfeiffer of Portland, Rubin faces a likely sentence of 5 to 7.5 years, if the prison time on each count is served concurrently. Pfeiffer also requested a terrorism enhancement, which could increase the length of her sentence. Rubin is scheduled to be sentenced before Judge Aiken on January 27th of next year. According to the terms of the agreement, Rubin agreed to reveal all information regarding her participation in three arson fires between 1997 and 2001. The arsons targeted wild horse corrals and meat processing facilities in eastern Oregon and eastern California and the Vail Ski Resort in Colorado. She also agreed that she will not have to reveal any information that would implicate or reveal the identity of any other participants in the actions. The plea is similar to the ones accepted earlier by fellow ELF defendants Jonathan Paul and Daniel McGowan. After the hearing, Rubin's attorney spoke with reporters outside the courthouse.
Well, if you were in court and heard the factual basis, it's obvious that Ms. Rubin's role in this was minor compared to many of the other defendants. She's now 40. She committed these offenses in her 20s. One of the offenses was committed 15 years ago, one 14, and one 12 years ago. So Rebecca Rubin that's going to appear before the court for sentencing in January is a very different person than the person in her 20s who committed these offenses. She never directly burned anything. She was present. She was certainly part of a group who was involved in these offenses. But her role was generally to act as a lookout or, in the cases where there were animals involved, to help liberate the animals so they wouldn't, you know, be damaged during the arsons.
Do you have any comment on the request for terrorism enhancement?
That's a difficult issue because it's already been litigated in this case long before I got involved. And the court already found, with respect to the previous defendants for similar conduct, that the terrorism enhancement applies. In the Ninth Circuit, in the case of one individual who appealed it to the Ninth Circuit, determined that, yes, in fact, it does apply. So there's not a lot of room to argue. Now, what the terrorism enhancement does is two things. It increases the sentencing guideline range by 12 levels, but it also takes a person who would otherwise be in a criminal history category 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 and pushes them all the way into criminal history category 6, which is grossly unfair because if, for example, two people committed the identical act and one of them had a lengthy criminal record and would otherwise already be in criminal history category 6, and another person like Rebecca who has not so much as a parking ticket are going to be treated the same under the guidelines in terms of their sentencing range because if the terrorism enhancement applies, one of the impacts of that is it automatically places you in criminal history category 6, which is the highest. Now, the court has recognized that in the other sentencings and then gave a downward variance because of the overrepresentation of criminal history for many of the other defendants. I expect that she'll do the same for Ms. Rubin. We started this process more than 3 years ago. Rebecca actually tried to surrender as early as 2009, and we had agreements with the District of Colorado and the District of Oregon, but the Eastern District of California would not sign off. Huh. And they were the only district that had charged one offense that carried a 30-year mandatory minimum sentence up to life. And absent some commitment from them to dismiss that count, there was no way that Rebecca was going to come forward. And so she just went on about her life. And a couple of years later, we approached them again. And again said, look, you know, she wants to turn herself in. We're willing to work out a reasonable plea consistent with what happened to the other defendants. But obviously you're going to have to drop that one count in California. And finally California agreed and got on board. I think what happened was they would not agree to dismiss the 30-year mandatory minimum count unless Rebecca would agree to cooperate fully. And they still had an open case with other defendants who were at large. And they were hoping if they caught some of those other people, they might want Rebecca to testify. And Rebecca said, that's not going to happen, and would not agree to that, and so there was no resolution. One of the unfortunate consequences of this is Rebecca was, I think, smart enough and understanding enough to know that one day she was going to have to face these charges and didn't want to bring in other people to face the misery with her, such as a husband or children. And so she gave up that part of her life. Very, very unfortunate. You know, anytime you're on the run like this, I've been a criminal defense attorney for over 30 years, and it's very, very difficult. It's like being in a prison without walls. You never know when the shoe's going to drop. It's a very difficult life. So she has already paid a significant penalty.
Most of the other radical environmental activists swept up in the large-scale FBI investigation named Operation Backfire were called before grand juries and ended up testifying against their former comrades. Two of those indicted for ELF actions remain at large. According to a Wikipedia entry on Operation Backfire, Joseph Debee is believed to be out of the reach of the FBI in Syria, which has no diplomatic relations with the United States, and Josephine Overacre is thought to be in Spain. The whole episode has had a major impact on activist culture and on the personal lives and families of many individuals, especially in Oregon, and has created a great deal of controversy and division among environmentalists and others working for social change. The tactics and approach adopted by the Earth Liberation Front are still being debated. With KBOU News, this is Paul Rowland.
KBOU volunteers have stepped up to their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Sam and Jenka to talk about how you can support KBOU Community Radio.
Yes, good evening.
Thanks, Robert. We're here in Membership Central in the back room at KBOU Studios, and we have phones ringing off the hook. We want to continue that trend through this hour by having you call and support your community radio station. This is our fall membership drive. This is one of the main ways that we get funding for this radio station is by coming to you a couple of times a year and asking for you to give maybe $60 a year, $120 a year, the basic membership's $40, whatever you can give in order to keep this community effort going. The number to call is 877-500-5266. Again, that number, 877-500-KBOO. My name is Jenka. I'm here with Sam, who is one of our stellar volunteers here on a regular basis, helping in every way in this community radio station, making this community effort possible.
Thank you, Jenka. Yes, good evening, everyone. You can also make your pledge of support for KBOO at kboo.fm. That is our website that we just spent a lot of hours and a good deal of money migrating it to a better server. We hear from the community. We welcome your input, your feedback. And what we heard was, you know, the website is kind of shaky. So we got it onto a better server to better serve you, the listener. And that's what we do. With the money that you bring us at 877-500-5266, and also bringing you an evening newscast produced every weekday by volunteers. These cats do not get paid. All the money you bring us at kboo.fm goes right into replacing and repairing equipment, getting new equipment as it becomes available. Come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. See the studios yourself. See where your money goes. It does not go to palatial digs. It goes right into the programming that you need to be a fully informed and activated citizen of your community.
We also offer free trainings for volunteers. People come in just fresh to radio, and many of them have skyrocketed into careers in radio, having gotten their training here at KBOU. You've heard Norm Solomon, I'm sure, on the radio a number of times. He got his start here at KBOU. Tom Hartman was on the radio at KBOU in his early days and is now a national presence. You just heard him last hour. So many people got their start here at KBOU. It's the place that you go to hear about what's going on here in Portland, in the surrounding community, in the world. And our reporters are all volunteers. That's the really amazing thing, is that we're able to provide the training for people to go out there and bring you this type of reporting. Again, the number to call, 877-500-5266. And we want you to call right now, support the evening news, which we're going to go back to right now.
Members of the Communication Workers of America, or CWA, have been in contract negotiations for 2 years with the Fund for the Public Interest, which raises funds for the Oregon branch of the Public Interest Research Group. Amid talk of an impending strike, a walkout and rally have been scheduled for tomorrow. For more on the story, KBOO's Robin Ryan spoke with Kristen Yount, one of the workers at the Fund for the Public Interest.
How many workers are represented in the labor struggles that your organization is going through?
I would say about 20 people.
And how long has this group been negotiating or engaged in contract negotiations with the Public Interest Research Group? That's who owns Fund for the Public Interest, is that correct?
Yeah, so the CWA has been negotiating with the Fund for the Public Interest for 2 years as of this Saturday. So it's been a long process, and we are getting nowhere.
And how long have you worked personally for this organization?
I've been there for a little over 2 years.
Have you seen a decline in your income or your compensation package in other ways?
Yeah, I mean, it's a performance-based job. We are reliant on quotas to dictate how much we make hourly. It could be anywhere from $9.50 to $14 an hour, depending on how your calling goes, how much money you raise.
What components does your group of workers need to see in order to sign a contract?
We want a just cause.
Which is?
Just cause for dismissal means that there has to be a reason for someone to be fired. It can't just be that the boss doesn't like you or a new manager comes in and doesn't like your style, because that happens. We're not asking for raises or benefits or anything like that. We're just asking for job security and for the ability to plan on having a job.
Wasn't there a similar work stoppage earlier this year, and how did that demonstration impact negotiations?
You know, it just seemed like it made the representative for the fund a little nervous, but it doesn't seem to faze them at all that we're speaking out against their employment policies, and it doesn't seem to bother them at all that they're supposed to be this left-leaning, progressive, public interest minding group, but they won't ensure our job security. They won't let us protect ourselves with a union.
Has management indicated what they're prepared to do in the event of a work stoppage?
We have been told that if we strike, then we will be fired. But a work stoppage is a concerted effort and it is protected by law.
So what's next, and how can folks who want to know more get involved?
We plan to leave our office at 611 Southeast Morrison at 4 o'clock tomorrow, and we will be walking to the Osperg office, which is on Southeast 11th and Clay, and we will rally there at 4:45, and we will demonstrate and ask the good people at Osperg and Environment Oregon why they don't support our union and why they're not fighting for us.
I'm Robin Ryan, and this is KBOO News.
A meeting of the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners on Wednesday night resulted in a unanimous vote to reject an application to build an export terminal for liquefied natural gas, or LNG, in Warrenton. The terminal was proposed several years ago by the company Oregon LNG, a subsidiary of the Leucadia National Holding Company. The terminal complex is the company's only project, including the connecting natural gas pipeline, which would travel from Warrenton at the mouth of the Columbia River through several Oregon counties before connecting to another pipeline in Woodland, Washington. According to Oregon LNG, the full project would be the largest privately funded development in state history. While Oregon LNG is continuing its application process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and state agencies, its efforts are unlikely to overcome the local zoning restrictions that formed the legal basis of last night's vote. For more on this story, KBOO's Sam Bowman spoke with Brett VandenHeuvel, Executive Director of Columbia Riverkeeper.
Last night, the Clatsop County Board voted to reject the application of Oregon LNG to build an export terminal in Warrenton, but that this was not the first time that they have rejected that application. Could you give me a brief history of this vote?
It's been a pretty amazing process. So an LNG company proposed to put a liquefied natural gas terminal near Astoria at the mouth of the Columbia River, and actually in 2005. And for several years, the Board of Commissioners in Clatsop County at that time were in favor of it, and they actually approved the land use applications and looked like it was moving forward, and Riverkeeper challenged that. And in the meantime, a new board of commissioners got elected, and they took a hard look at the application and decided that it didn't comply with the law, and they denied it. So it was a fascinating exercise in democracy of people getting elected that are going to apply the law, not just rubber stamp any industry that comes to town.
And I understand Oregon LNG almost took it to the state Supreme Court.
when this new board of commissioners came on and started asking, you know, serious questions, or the LNG company didn't want them to vote on it. They didn't want them to review it. So they tried to block that. And, you know, they're trying to block the democratic process, and they challenged it in state court and lost. They took it to the Court of Appeals and lost, and even asked the Supreme Court to try to block this vote. And everyone along the way said, no, we're not going to do that. They have the right to review your application and to vote on this. And that's what happened last night.
What would the impacts on the river of the LNG terminal have been?
So, liquefied natural gas is a super-cooled methane that is put into these giant tankers and would be exported to Asia. So we would have impacts all the way from fracking, you know, the fracking of the gas in the in Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, Canada, that would be sent on long pipelines. So one of the impacts in Oregon would be constructing hundreds of miles of new pipeline crossing many streams and family farms. Some of that would be taken by eminent domain. And then we'd have a large new terminal built on the Columbia that would require a lot of dredging and destroying this juvenile salmon habitat. It would require, you know, these large super tankers of oil coming in, or of gas coming in to pick up the gas. And the public safety involved in that as well. So there'd be threats to the salmon, there'd be impacts to people who try to fish and recreate on the river, and then, you know, the thought of a super tanker full of condensed gas passing right by many communities is not very appealing either. So there's something for everyone to be concerned about with LNG.
Are there any other similar terminals proposed in the Columbia River area? I know there's one in the southern Oregon coast.
There are not right now. There was another LNG terminal at a place called Bradwood Landing that citizens were able to stand up and defeat that in 2010. As you say, there's one in Coos Bay that's currently actively moving, that, you know, they have applications filed, and you know, we're hopeful that that one gets denied as well. On the Columbia, as you know, there's this massive rush of fossil fuel export. You know, we've seen the coal export terminals pop up. There's new oil terminals proposed. There's liquefied natural gas. So it's a new and emerging, and it's getting worse, this problem of everyone thinking the Columbia should turn into a fossil fuel highway to export dirty fossil fuels to Asia.
Brett, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
For Cable Evening News, this is Sam Bowman speaking with Brett Vandenhoevel, Executive Director of Columbia Riverkeeper.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every weekday, I can personally attest to that, to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us now are Sam and Jenka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Good evening. My name is Sam. I'm joined with the irrepressible, inimitable Jenka Soderberg, our KBOO's PM News and Public Affairs Director. And I want to tell you a little bit, just one of the massive bills that KBOO incurs, bringing you 168 uninterrupted hours of news and public affairs, arts and entertainment, analysis, and music every single week. We need to rent a spot on one of those big radio towers out on Council Bluffs, $56,000. I'm not going to ask any one of you to shoulder that all by yourself. I'm going to ask 1,000 of you to call right now, 877-500-5266. It may take you a while to get through because we've got about 4 people taking those calls. But here's the deal.
1,000 people, what, $56 a piece? How about, make it a rounded off, make it 60.
Yeah, $5 a month. You can set up a monthly deduction straight from your bank. It's very easy. Just ask Jesse or Adam or Don to tell you how they can help you do that.
Or we could get 60 people giving $1,000 a year, or 56 people giving $1,000 a year.
I bet there are 60 people listening who have $1,000 and looking for a place to put it. You know, 40,000 people aren't paying into the system here. 40,000 people are using KBOO and not pitching in. Now, I'm not here to guilt you. I'm here to liberate you from your guilt. I'm here to tell you how to get out from under that stone. And that is at kboo.fm. Use the safe, convenient, easy, and secure web form to make your fully tax-deductible donation in the form of your membership dues. Pay your radio bill. However you want to think of it, do it now. 877-500-5266.
Disinvest from Wall Street. If you've got any of your money left in any of those junk bonds, disinvest and invest that back into your community, something that gives back to you every single day. You know, this newscast is only possible because of KBOO members and KBOO volunteers. If you can't afford some time to come down to the station to volunteer, then consider a donation. Consider $1,000. Can you give a substantial amount to keep this local hard-hitting news coming? It can be paid in installments. It can even be automatically deducted from your checking account each month. You know, $1,000 is less than $3 a day. I mean, KBOO is definitely worth that much to me. Is it worth that much to you? $3 a day? If you can't do that, $5 a month. That will get you a t-shirt if you can give $5 a month. Think about that. $5 a month. How often do you waste $5 every month? How can you just take that $5 a month and put it into something that is worthwhile, that is based in your community, that is an effort of all of us coming together and making this amazing magic happen? 877-500-KBOO. I mean, we heard about a great victory just now on the news, the decision not to build a liquefied natural gas terminal. I mean, we have heard about 3 of the 6 planned coal terminals getting canceled. That's from the organizing that's going on thanks to this community radio station. We're here in your community, and we're providing you updates on a regular basis on some of these movements that I know a lot of you are involved in that are listening, and I know that you appreciate that. But how much are you able to give? Whether it's just $5 a month, whether it's $10, $20 a month, or the low-income membership, $20, the basic membership of $40. This is all of us coming together. 877-500-KBOO. Show your appreciation right now for this community radio station.
You know, Jenka, you mentioned, you mentioned $1,000, you mentioned monthly, $84 a month comes to a little over $1,000 over the course of the year. $84 is what it costs to run KBOO for 1 hour. Think about that as you dial 877-500-5266. Do it now.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Those last four numbers spell out KBOO. Stay tuned for Wisdom of the Elders at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio News and Views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with patchy morning fog and highs, around 60 degrees.
It's 5:28. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
The appeal of fast food chains has not been their food, mostly fat, salty, sugary, empty calorie, blah, but their speed. Order, pay, and bam, your warmed over burger, pizza, chicken, taco delight is instantly handed to you. Yet, for a mega chain based on fast, McDonald's has proven to be embarrassingly slow, leaving it with flat sales and declining appeal. The executives in charge were so stuck on peddling obesity and diabetes for fat profits that they completely missed a mass shift in today's marketplace, the rise of health-conscious consumers. As a result, McDonald's has been losing out to Subway, Chipotle, Panera, and other chains that have been quick to cater to the lean and green customer base, particularly women and young buyers. But look out, for here comes the McDonald's marketing machine with a blur of ads and promotional gimmicks touting, quote, a new global commitment to make a world of difference. Using endearing pictures of children, the Big Mac chain now claims to be all about fresh veggies, fruit, salads, juices, milk, health, and a fuzzy happiness for all. The Golden Arches Empire has even signed up Bill Clinton to give its PR hype a sheen of sincerity. For an undisclosed splash of cash, the fast food marketer says it is now global partners with the Clinton Foundation to produce a healthier generation through its sales of more nutritious Happy Meals to the world's kiddos. However, the fast food giant is in no hurry to deliver on this pledge, claiming that getting healthier foods into its supply chain is a difficult and slow process. The CEO snickered that we don't go down to the grocery stores. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, maybe they should. Doing it the McDonald's way, he says, will take until 2020 to get the more nutritious stuff into all the stores of the chain's 20th largest markets.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
A new cure for Alzheimer's disease may have been found, according to a recent landmark British study published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. It could be another 10 years before it can be used for humans, but researchers say it's a historic turning point for future generations. The study was done on mice who were injected with a neurodegenerative disease that is caused by abnormal prion proteins, the closest disease to human disorders found in animals. After 5 weeks, researchers observed that the group, which had been injected, remained free of symptoms such as memory loss, impaired reflexes, limb dragging. Also, they lived longer than the mice who were left untreated. The mice suffered from severe side effects, such as significant weight loss and higher blood sugar levels. Built-up, misfolded proteins cause the brain's natural defenses to stop making new proteins, causing the death of neurons. The new drug compound stops this from happening by targeting the enzyme that causes the buildup. The blood-brain barrier is a natural shield in the brain that prevents toxins from getting into the brain and is also an obstacle for drug treatments. But the test compound has a key component that enables it to pass this barrier. Scientists are optimistic about the drug's potential, but further tests are required before human trials can begin.
This week, California state legislators held a joint hearing with prison officials to discuss solitary confinement conditions in state prisons. The debate on prisoner isolation, specifically in secure housing units or SHUs at Pelican Bay Prison, has prompted two statewide hunger strikes amongst inmates, the most recent of which occurred this summer and involved thousands of prisoners. Protracted legal battles and activism campaigns have centered on harsh conditions in SHUs, small windowless cells where prisoners can be held indefinitely, some for more than 25 years. Inmates can be placed in isolation if prison officials deem them gang-affiliated, even in lieu of violent offenses. Wednesday's hearing is being heralded by prisoner advocates as a first step towards lasting legislative and policy changes to solitary confinement in prisons across the state. Today, I spoke with Carol Strickman, a staff attorney with the Legal Services for Prisoners with Children, who attended Wednesday's hearing. How does the recent hearing relate to the recent hunger strike in California in protest of solitary confinement issues in state prisons?
Well, there's a direct relationship in that the two chairs of the public safety committees had agreed to hold hearings, in light of the hunger strike, and urge the hunger strikers to stop, and in a powerful press statement that they made saying, you know, we hear you and we're going to do something. And it was in light of that that the hunger strike was called off or suspended. The topic of yesterday's hearing was the conditions of confinement. So the questions did ask about were prisoners going to be punished for participation in the hunger strike? They asked questions about the statistics of who was there. There were specific questions asked about women prisoners. And they also were interested to know what were alternatives to solitary confinement.
So this has been obviously an ongoing issue and debate even previously to the most recent hunger strike. Would you say that any steps have been made by California prisons so far that you would call an improvement on conditions?
The improvements have been fairly minuscule. You know, after the first prisoner hunger strikes in 2011, prisoners were given a ball to play with in isolation while they're in the exercise pen, and they were given hats, sort of watch caps up in Pelican Bay because it can get so cold, as you know, in Crescent City area, and to wear at night. You know, I think in the big picture, in terms of looking at long-term solitary confinement, we're not really seeing very much. The prison system has promulgated a pilot program, and they are reviewing, doing case-by-case reviews of people currently in solitary confinement, and they are issuing statistics that they are, quote-unquote, releasing a number of people from solitary confinement to the next level down of high-level security, but does involve more ability to congregate with other prisoners, and that is a step forward, but it's really too early to judge the program as a whole because they're just really starting. And if they turn around and fill those cells with other prisoners and keep them as long as they kept the first group, then, you know, we really won't have gotten anywhere.
What particular legislative changes are prisoner advocates hoping might result from this hearing or this series of hearings?
Well, you know, we're brainstorming that. We're, you know, we're going to be making presentations to the legislators with some of our ideas, but we'd like to see a cap on how long someone can be in solitary confinement. And essentially, we want to see additional changes in the procedures. We haven't really objected to someone getting a shoe term for an act, for a rules violation, and currently you can get up to 5 years for that, for a murder. But we really object very strongly to anyone going into the shoe for association. That's not enough. And then it's basically solitary confinement is cruel in and of itself, and we want to break it down and change the conditions so that anybody who is considered to be, you know, highly dangerous in the moment still has certain quality of life benefits, which are basic human right. The food has to be adequate. They have to get adequate medical care. The contact with family members, including contact visits and telephones, is so critical. The ability to see outside of their cell, there's a lot of issues on the table.
I've been speaking with Carol Strickman, a staff attorney with the Legal Services for Prisoners with Children. This has been Jen Chavez for KBOO News.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Sam and Jenka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Robert. We're here in Membership Central in the back room at KBOO here in our scrappy little studios at Southeast 8th Avenue, and we're asking for your support. This is one of the few times a year when we come to you, the listener, and ask for you to become a member or to renew your membership or to become a member again. Maybe you've let your membership lapse. The way to do that is to pick up your phone, pull it out of your pocket, wherever your phone is located, and dial 877-500-5266. Support the hard-hitting local progressive news that you hear on KBOO on a daily basis. Again, 877-500-5266 to be a part of this community effort. Here we are bringing you local coverage of elections, protests, events for 45 years. We're in our 45th year here in Portland and supporting the community the entire time. And now we're asking for your support. Maybe you've never given before. Now is your chance. 877-500-5266 is the number to call.
We need $739,000 to bring you 1 year of KBOO. What will be your part in that? What stone are you adding to the soup? Call us right now and tell us the amount of your radio bill. 877-500-5266. Think about that for a minute. You know, we get the PGE bill, we get the Northwest Natural bill, we get the Water Bureau bill. Every 3 months? That's just bizarre. A quarterly bill? Well, dig this, man. You get a yearly bill, and you get to decide whether you'll pay it. Well, we know now's the time. And how much you'll pay and how you'll pay. Isn't that great? No other bill will ever let you do that. So take advantage. KBOO.FM. Thank you to William in Vancouver as a brand new member. You know, we're at about 10% membership of our listeners. William is doing his part to bring that up to 11, 12, dare I hope for 15. Myrna in PD, right here in Portland, also a new member. Herschel has renewed his membership. Thank you, William, Myrna, and Herschel. We are so happy to welcome you into the KBOO family. We are so happy to see you come back again for another year of supporting community-centered electronic media. It only happens with the support of the community. And guess who that is? That's right. It's you. When you call 877-500-5266, when you walk into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right between Ankeny and Burnside, you make it happen. That's how it works. It only works with your support.
Come on down and meet Jen and Robert, who are reading the news, and Ian, who's running the board in here. And you can meet the volunteers that are answering phones, and you can meet me and Sam. Come on down, 20 Southeast 8th. Join the party. And if you want to just make it real easy, pick up your phone, 877-500-5266, and make that commitment. $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever it is. 877-500-KBOO. Call right now.
Displaced indigenous communities successfully shut down the Cerro Matoso mine in Colombia on Wednesday. For the past 2 weeks, about 6,000 indigenous Zenú people have been protesting the facility, halting the company's output. Protesters seek 8,000 hectares of land from the government to relocate their communities after being displaced by the mining operation. The indigenous community's proximity to the mine for the past 30 years has led to widespread health problems. Reports of the area surrounding the mine find heightened rates of cancer, asthma, stillbirths, miscarriages, degenerative skin conditions, hair and nail loss, and several documented instances of birth defects. Indigenous organizers also spoke about the pollution of soil and waterways relied upon for fishing. The Colombian Mining Ministry is attempting to negotiate with protesters who have so far rejected several of the government's offers. The shutdown is costing the Colombian government about $185,000 per day in lost tax revenue. Cerro Matoso, the world's second largest ferro-nickel mining mining operation, is run by Anglo-Australian multinational mining and petroleum corporation BHP Billiton. Ferro-nickel is an alloy of iron and nickel used in making stainless steel. BHP says its electric furnaces will be irreversibly damaged if operations are disrupted for long enough.
The South Pacific nation of Fiji, ruled by a dictatorship, has until recently been a pariah among the world's democracies. But following the regime's pledge to hold parliamentary elections in September, Australia's recently elected Liberal government called for reconciliation with the regime. After consulting two of the dictatorship's leading opponents, however, reporter Michael Gene Horowitz was left wondering whether elections will, in fact, be held and, if they are conducted, how fair they'll be.
Reverend Davita Banivanua, head of Fiji's Methodist Church, which commands the spiritual allegiance of over a third of Fijians.
I wouldn't like to call it oppression, but I see it as intimidation, trying out our humility. Yeah.
Make no mistake, Fiji's seven-year dictatorship has its progressive aspects. It's ended the outdated oligarchy of tribal chiefs and curbed discrimination against Fiji's Indian minority, which composes more than a third of the population. discrimination previously perpetrated by the nation's indigenous majority, a mix of Melanesian and Polynesian peoples. Yet for all its achievements, Fiji remains conspicuously authoritarian, which has led to its expulsion from the Commonwealth and Pacific Forum and the jeopardizing of its preferential trade status with the U.S. because of complaints of union busting by its leading Federation of Labor Unions. But while in Suva last month, I noted a new development. Coordinated resistance to military tyranny by a Labor Party led by a deposed Prime Minister of Indian origin, teaming with the leading political party of Fiji's indigenous groups, the Social Democrat Liberals, all blessed by the advocacy for democracy of the Methodist Church. In an exclusive interview with KBOO, the deposed PM, Mahendra Chaudhry, seemed particularly disturbed by the plight of the media in Fiji over the past 4 years.
We've had no media freedom since 2009. Media is licensed. It's kind of blackmail that if you don't toe the line, your license will be cancelled. Fiji TV, which is the oldest television station here, they are given 6-month license and they're kept in line that way. So there's total control of the media by the regime.
The Methodists, for their part, point out that licensing not only constrains the media, but the bar as well.
The registration that is done annually, I don't know whether this is done anywhere else in the world, where if you want to practice as a lawyer, you have to apply annually to be received. And if you go against government, there is a decree there that will not help you do that. The complete freedom of the judiciary may not be there.
To improve its image, the regime has assured critics it will hold parliamentary elections by September. But without an independent judiciary and media, and without poll watchers from the Pacific Forum, it's difficult to imagine a fair contest. And the Labour Party isn't even certain the government plans to hold an unfair election.
We're supposed to be having elections within 12 months. But we don't have legislation on conduct of elections. The legislation that there was revoked by decree and it has not been replaced. Then Prime Minister's so-called political party, that is not taking shape. And these are some indicators which have led some people to believe that we might not have an election.
No electoral legislation, no political party to defend the government. Small wonder the Methodists are being advised that the regime may be rethinking its promise to hold elections.
People are saying that they're trying to weigh their options now. If they will win, then election will come. If they find out that it's unwinnable, then maybe we'll continue the way we are. That's what we hear from people. We hope that the election will come. Fiji needs that. Its economy needs a newly elected government.
After a spirited 17 years of independence, during which Fiji developed a world-class tourism industry, the island nation has endured no less than 3 military takeovers. 2 against the Labour Party in 87 and 2000 respectively, and the recent one against the SDL in 2006. At the close of interview, former PM Chaudhry reflected back on his nation's 25 years of trouble.
We have been robbed of our right to govern this country twice. Unfortunately, the country has been a victim of the number of coups since 1987 and never been able to recover from the damage that these coups have inflicted on the country. The economy has suffered quite substantially. I think we would have been way ahead today had these coups not taken place. The kind of poverty that you see here today, poor wages and deteriorating infrastructure and all that is exactly attributable.
Government opinion was not solicited for this report because solicitation would have required conforming to protocol unacceptable to this correspondent. For KBOO Pacific News in neighboring Tonga, this is Michael Jean Horowitz.
In Iraqi news, a statement released on Thursday by the Justice Ministry says that 42 convicted Iraqi prisoners have been hanged on terrorism-related charges in Baghdad, including one woman. Despite international appeals to abolish this form of capital punishment, Iraq has defended its use of hanging as a way to, quote, face down insurgents bent to destabilize the country, end quote. Over 5,000 people have been killed since April due to an increase in violence, including 200 this month alone. Iraq is ranked 4th on the world's top executioners list. 132 people have been executed this year alone in Iraq.
And now the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, October 10th, 2013. Israeli troops attack a Palestinian child in Jerusalem and kidnap a civilian in northern West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers attacked on Thursday afternoon a Palestinian child in Jerusalem Old City, local sources reported. According to witnesses, a group of Israeli soldiers stopped the child at the entrance of Al-Aqsa Mosque, then beat him up and left. The boy was moved to a local clinic in the Old City after sustaining light wounds. Earlier on Thursday, Israeli troops manning a checkpoint near Nablus City in northern West Bank kidnapped a Palestinian man. Yusuf Ishtewi, 22, was on his way home at Kufr Kaddum village near Nablus, coming from his work in Jericho, when soldiers stopped him at the checkpoint, searched him, then took him to unknown location, local sources reported. Ishtewi was kidnapped earlier in the year by Israeli troops from his home for taking part in the weekly peaceful protest against the wall and settlements that are held in his village every Friday. Elsewhere, Israeli police forces arrested on Thursday 13 Palestinian workers from their workplace in the coastal city of Nazareth. The police said that all arrested workers did not have permission from the army to work in Israel. The Palestinian Workers Union issued a statement asking human rights groups to intervene to aid those workers. Hundreds of Palestinian workers risk arrest and fines to cross to Israel for work due to the bad economical situation and lack of jobs in the Palestinian territories. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 10th, 2013, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please keep visiting our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Badnoura.
Listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Genevieve McDaniel, Nell Gagnon, Sam Bowman, Robin Ryan, Michael Horowitz, and Paul Rowland. The producer is myself, Jen Chavez. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Coming up tomorrow morning, Friday at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, hosts Ani and Lynn speak with Nathan Schneider, author of Thank You, Anarchy, an up-close inside account of Occupy Wall Street's first year in New York City, written by one of the first reporters to cover the phenomenon. At 9, hear a special program with Alan Wiseman, the author of the best-selling The World Without Us, talking about his new book, Countdown, Our Last Best Hope for a Future on Earth. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Dennis Bernstein hosts Flashpoints, investigative news radio. And at 11 a.m., it'll be The Digital Divide with Rabia Yemen. Coming up at 6 tonight is Wisdom of the Elders, but first, we go to Sam and Jenka to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
We are here. My name is Sam. I'm joined by Jenka. But you know, I want to tell you about some really special people. I want to tell you about David and Aurora. David and Aurora are two Portlanders who may or may not know each other, but they are family now. They are our family. They have joined the KBOO family. They called 877-500-5266, and they took the plunge. They took that first step. They answered the call by making the call, and they became active members of KBOO. It wasn't enough for them to be passive listeners. They needed to feel involved, and they took action. What will you do when you call 877-500-5266? What's the amount of your radio bill, and how do you wish to pay it? 877-500-5266.
You know, when you think about all of the things that KBOO provides and the KBOO Evening News, particularly with all of the stories that are covered here that aren't covered on other media. I mean, you think about even tonight, we heard about the lack of media freedom in Fiji. That was produced by Michael Gene Horowitz, who used to live in Portland, moved out to the South Pacific, but still reports for KBOO, goes out and gets interviews and sends them back to us on MP3 so that we can play them for you on the radio.
That's commitment.
You know, that's the type of influence that that KBOO has on people. Becomes a lifelong, relationship between you and this radio station. So people join, they come down and volunteer, and then come back time and time again and say thank you, KBOO. Thank you with their dollars or just by visiting 20 Southeast 8th. Whatever you can do, whether you can volunteer or if you can give $5 or $10 a month, do it now by calling 877-500-5266. Think about giving $5 a month out of your checking account to KBOO Community Radio. Support this community effort and support locally produced news. You know, we're not producing fluff stories about Hollywood superstars. We're reporting about issues about Portland's homeless, the janitor strike in downtown Portland. No other station bothered to cover that. The successful stopping of a clear cut on Mount Hood with exclusive interviews from the courthouse as the decision was made. KBOO was there. And the Tacoma port blockade and peace activists carrying out direct action to keep military vehicles from deploying to Iraq. We had reporters on the scene reporting from that as well. These are volunteer reporters that are going out, getting these stories, putting them together, and with free training here at the station provided by me and a few other staff that are paid a minimal amount in order to keep this thing going. And it's amazing. The community has come through a year after year since 1968 to keep this experiment on the radio alive. And we think we can go for at least another 45 years with your support. 877-500-5266. And we offer thank you gifts. If you're able to give $60 or above, there are thank you gifts that you can get. You can get T-shirts to show your KBOO, your support for KBOO. You can get a subscription to Yes Magazine, which reframes the biggest problems of our times in terms of their solutions. Again, 877-500-5266. 2 minutes left to support the evening news. You can do it if you pick up your phone. 877-500-5266. We're so close to our goal for this hour. If we just get your call at the $120 level, $10 a month, I know we could do it. 877-500-5266.
Approximately 30 cents a day. You can do that. We can do that. You know, when Jenka, you mentioned thank you gifts. These are the little tokens, the way that we say thank you for your support, the support you give to say thank you for the nonstop, relentless flood of information, news, analysis, arts and entertainment, and music. It all comes to you because you bring the dollars. You make it happen. You come in and you volunteer. And that's how KBOO thanks you for that support. I want to thank right now the Roxy at 1121 Southwest Stark. Thank you, Vincente's Gourmet Pizza at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Thank you, Cannon's Rib Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue. These are restaurants right here in your town that got involved. They recognized the value, the importance of community media, and they got involved in a way that made sense for them. They provided food to keep these volunteers who are taking your calls at 877-500-5266. Fed and energized and ready to take your call. So call right now.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for your support. And it looks like the numbers were just updated. And we did make our goal for this
Thank
hour.
You.
Thank you. And let's keep the momentum going. 877-500-KBOO.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor two presentations by Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert. Nicole is a big picture thinker in the areas of finance, energy, and the environment, and Lawrence is an inspiring and energetic community organizer from New Zealand. Together, they'll be talking about the smart, simple, and creative ways people are reinventing our world using tools like local currencies, collaborative consumption, green projects, and political organizing. Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert will be speaking at 7 p.m. October 9th at the First Congregational Church, 4515 Southwest West Hills Road in Corvallis, and again at 7 p.m. on October 10th at Tabor Space, Southeast 55th and Belmont in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.
You.
Tune into KBOO this coming Monday, October 14th from 8 to 10 p.m. when members of the Different Nature Collective present Different Voices. Here are some of the most unusual and challenging uses of the human voice in new music. Sound poetry in which the conventions of melody and meaning melt into a different reality.